The sinking of the Titanic stands to this day as a cautionary tale about ineptitude and, to a certain degree, hubris. Investigations into the disaster placed much of the blame on the captain. He hadn't heeded ice warnings, they said. He was going too fast in a dangerous area. So fast that by the time the lookout saw the iceberg, it was too late to turn the ship. But one historian has come up with a new storyline. Tim Malton is the author of three books about the Titanic. His latest, Titanic, A Very Deceiving Night, argues that icy waters created ideal conditions for a rare type of oceanic mirage. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Celeste. Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Exactly. Explain how this oceanic mirage works and the conditions that are required in order to make it appear.
Okay, actually, cold water mirages are quite common when the sea water is very, very cold indeed. And I've researched the logbooks of 75 ships from April 1912 in the area where Titanic sank. And they clearly indicate that the air near the sea surface was very, very cold and the air higher up was much warmer because the area had previously been heated by the Gulf Stream. And this meant that light bent downwards around the curvature of the Earth and lifted up a false horizon, which hid the iceberg.
So what did they see? You say they hid the iceberg, so they just saw open water in this what's called super reflection?
Yeah, that's right. What they actually saw was what they thought was haze, but actually it was purely the molecular scattering of light due to the enormous distance they could see. But unfortunately, it camouflaged the iceberg because they're used to seeing the iceberg against the stars, but then they were seeing it against the refracting horizon. So the iceberg itself wasn't miraging, but it was hidden from view by the false horizon.
Have you ever seen one of these ocean mirages that you write about?
Yes, I have. I went to Newfoundland, where they are very common, and saw several there. And they are quite well photographed. If you look on the internet, you can find them and things. But I did want to pick up on something else you said, which is that Titanic was not going too fast for the conditions. Obviously, we now know, because of the abnormal refraction, that she was. But what you have to understand is all ships in 1912 went full speed in ice at night in clear weather.
Which, and obviously the Titanic only had, what, 20 lifeboats. There were lots of things about the sinking of the Titanic that ended up in real change in terms of safety regulations for oceanic
sure.
travel. How exactly do you get the data going back 100 years to prove your point?
Yeah. Well, you guys have a wonderful system called NOAA, and NOAA is based in North Carolina, and you have the largest weather archive in the world there, and I got a lot of my data from there, and the rest of it came from Hamburg in Germany, where they still have the original logbooks of 75 ships that were in the area where the Titanic sank.
So let me make sure that I have your storyline correct. They were going the correct established speed in an icy area, right?
Yeah, they were going flat out, which all ships did, even the much faster Mauritania at 27 knots. She would go full speed on such a clear night as the Titanic sank, and it was a completely clear night. What they did not realize was that abnormal refraction was present, and that under those circumstances, it would be impossible to see an iceberg. And also, it caused the air density profile at Titanic's wreck site caused her rocket to appear lower, and in a final nail in the coffin, the stratified air, which you get in a thermal inversion, which is what I've been describing, that caused the scrambling of Titanic's Morse lamp signals with a nearby ship.
You mean that was difficult for the rescuers to come and find them?
Yes, what it is that the survivors noticed that the stars were flashing abnormally that night. And unfortunately, the flashing stars were caused by the same atmosphere that caused the random flashing of the Morse lamp. And it took the meaning out of the Morse lamp communications between the Titanic and the Californian.
We're speaking with Tim Malton, the author of three books about the Titanic. His latest is called Titanic, A Very Deceiving Night, in which he argues that it was, in fact, a rare kind of oceanic mirage that contributed to the disaster there. If this is the case and these oceanic mirages are relatively common in these conditions, you would think it would have caused other ships to have accidents.
Yes, and funnily enough, other ships did have accidents. In fact, the Niagara, only 2 days before, crashed into the same ice barrier that the Titanic crashed into, and she noted clear horizon with mirage in her log. Several of the ships in the area noticed miraging, but of course, they didn't all have radio. So Titanic had set sail before the Niagara had filed her report with the Hydrographic Office in Washington.
Tim, you've written three books about the sinking of the Titanic?
I have, yep.
Why? Why this preoccupation with this boat?
Well, it's a great question. I must say, there are a few people around the world that do share the preoccupation. I mean, for me personally, I watched a wonderful black and white film called A Night to Remember, based on Walter Lord's classic story of the disaster when I was 7 years old. It's a great film. I recommend everyone to watch it. But also, I then just got more and more interested. The more I learned about it, the more I realized that people didn't really understand what really caused it. They were the best crew of their day. She was one of the safest and best ships ever built. They were absolutely paying attention. They expected to see ice. So I was determined to find out why they didn't and why a ship, which appeared to be only 5 miles away, did not come to her aid that night.
But although they didn't know all of these things about what you're calling super reflections and oceanic mirages at the time, 100 years ago.
No, they did. They did, because they used to navigate by the stars, and the training of officers included a knowledge of abnormal refraction. And in fact, the second officer in the inquiries, he's the most senior surviving officer, and in the Titanic inquiry after the disaster, he talks about sometimes seeing the loom of a light or the refraction of a light at a distance of 60 miles. So they did understand about refraction, but they didn't realize the way in which it would hide an iceberg that was 100 feet high from a lookout that was also about 100 feet high.
So why have the investigations blamed the captain?
The investigations blamed the captain because actually, they didn't. The investigations exonerated Captain Smith and said that he was not negligent, but they did blame the captain of the nearby Californian for not coming to Titanic's aid. And what my theory explains is two things. First of all, it explains why this man did not come to Titanic's aid, but it also shows that the haze that the lookout saw was not a lie. The lookouts have never been believed before about the haze because it was such a clear night. But what I've been able to demonstrate is the haze they saw is consistent with a completely clear atmosphere.
Tim Maltin, author of Titanic, A Very Deceiving Night, along with two other books about the Titanic. Tim, thank you so much.
Thanks, Celeste. My pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.